Welcome to the Brainstorm, episode 104. We're continuing on the AI bubble, and is it selling to your customers and funding it yourself? We've got how to make money on the way to AGI, and we've got some new benchmarks that are they showing us the future, or are they just other things that we're going to measure incorrectly and then saturate until new benchmarks come out? Brett, why don't you tee up the first one? AMD, OpenAI, how are they feeding each other?
Yeah, so kind of similar to the NVIDIA deal, except in this case, OpenAI is investing in AMD through warrants and agreeing to buy billions, tens of billions, lots of AMD chips. So far, savvy because AMD is trading up, you know, tens of percent on the news, and OpenAI has just secured potentially 10% of the company through warrants, conditional on it actually building out kind of these gigawatts of AMD chips that they plan to deploy. And it could be OpenAI owns them, or it could be one of their infrastructure partner owns them. In some ways, this is a trajectory that we thought things would move, in that AMD's chips seem to be better for, or maybe at least more competitive with NVIDIA for inference. So when you have an AI model, you do training, which is you have a big data center where you're churning all the data through it. And then at the end, you need to serve it to end customers, and that's called the inference. So when you ask ChatGPT something and it's taking time to answer, it's running through inference chips to provide you with that answer. Historically, OpenAI has done it all on the same set of chips, and actually flexing their training chips to their inference chips has been a way that their infrastructure has been differentiated that others are now copying. And now training also looks a lot more like inference, because some of the training you're doing is you're having the model talk to itself and figure out solutions to things, and then you're marking it right or wrong to help it determine how to chain together thoughts to get to answers. So kind of these AMD chips that can have more memory attached are, you know, potentially at least more competitive with NVIDIA on inference. And so agreeing to a big chunk of AMD chip installs is probably makes sense from OpenAI's perspective. And it also reduces their risk exposure to NVIDIA and kind of the single supplier risk. So to me, it makes sense.
But does it do anything for you in terms of, it's like we're moving, in the last episode, we said, okay, a lot of what's happened so far has been driven by cash flows from social media giants. And it's like, we are clearly exiting the cash economy, right? It's like, now we're going to equity. And then it's like, you know, what's the next step after equity? Is it's like you go to debt, and then you go to the end of the cycle. Is that the right way to think about this, or you don't think it necessarily matters?
Well, I agree with the sequence in that debt markets are going to fund a lot of this infrastructure, and then at some point we'll get overbuilt, and that'll be the end of the cycle. Here it's not. I mean, the person I'm curious about is how Jensen feels at NVIDIA, where he's just agreed to inject, you know, a lot of money into OpenAI, and OpenAI has said, thank you, we'll take that money, and yeah, we're going to buy some of your chips, but we're also going to buy your competitors' chips with it.
But does
and we're going to take an equity stake in the competitor. Like, that's kind of, you know.
Well, does now NVIDIA have indirect exposure to owning AMD? Because they're investing $100 billion into OpenAI. OpenAI is now going to own potentially up to a 10% stake in AMD. So now NVIDIA has exposure to AMD's success as well through OpenAI. I mean, this is getting very
it's not a snake. It's not a snake eating its own tail. It's Medusa eating her feet.
Sure. I mean, I think that there's like the amount of capital that needs to be motivated into equipment here is probably, you know, in our view, by the end of the cycle, going to be world historical. And so that's going to result in a lot of players in co-opetition with each other, building it out. There's clearly, you know, and kind of like Intel is getting roped into the mix as well. One way you could think about it is kind of like the FTC is going to be basically like, hands off, go to town, do whatever mergers and acquisitions and like cross collaborations you need to do, because it's kind of like the Western aligned, you know, tech giants against whatever's going on in China and the China aligned countries. And so then therefore, you know, we are happy to give you fair rein to kind of like consolidate and build up this, you know, set of strategic assets, because we think we need it. And so I would imagine if you rewind the clock 3 years, these kinds of deals would probably not get struck, not because they didn't make sense, but because, you know, you announce it and then you have to spend 2 years battling the government to try to convince them that you can do it. And then the government's like, yes, OpenAI, you can do that, but you have to turn Sora into a separate app that you don't own and sell off this piece of your business, you know? And so now kind of there's much more open season on striking these kinds of alignments. And that, you know, it does mean, it means that you can like accelerate the flow of capital to the States. It also means you could like slam on the accelerator and go straight over the cliff. I just think the cliff is, you know, a ways off from where we're at now.
Well, that gets us to the GPU demand side of things. It's right, this deal is struck. I see a lot of things that remind me of commodities in the past, which is headlines saying, right, kind of along what you just said, Brett, this is fine. There's a decade-long shortage here of compute, right? The world is short compute. And even if you look out 10 years, we're still going to be short compute. And I tweeted this out. This was my reaction is, it's like, sure, there have been historical cases of decade-long shortages, but often it's like when you hear those headlines, it mistakes duration with magnitude, right? So it's like saying there's a decade-long shortage is actually just saying it's like currently there's a crazy big shortage. And it's like if the market works, that should motivate capital in. And it's actually the degree to which it does that, it actually shortens the duration much faster than would otherwise be the case. And it's like examples, some of the, you know, this is ChatGPT/Grok driven, right? Biggest shortages have been in non-functioning economies. So it's like you've got Mao, you've got Cuba. In functioning economies, you have war. So it's like post-World War II, people coming back and like housing and things like that. And then of course it's like, what is the exception? Things that take long lead times. And it's like, well, energy infrastructure in the US, certainly currently a long lead time business. Is this a decade long shortage, or is this just a price signal that's going to motivate?
But it is a decade long shortage if you believe our forecast and kind of the direction that I would bias our forecast even more so, as in, you know, these deals that are for $100 billion from NVIDIA to an implied like $500 billion of spend from OpenAI spread over some number of years, or here the AMD deal, I think it was, you know, it's 10 gigawatts or something like that, or 6 gigawatts, you know, it implies not quite as big, but, you know, a meaningfully hundreds of billions of dollars of potential spend over time. But kind of our official forecast is on the order of $1.5 to $2 trillion in chip spend in 2030 on the year, not over time, like the individual year. That's how much is needed across the industry. And if you look right now, the reason the companies are scrambling right now, and the way you're right, is that like OpenAI is, there's just a report out on their hardware device with Joni Ivy, the Apple designer, saying that, well, there's some technical things they're working through. Also, they just don't have enough chips to service the product if they were to sell it into market. Like the worst thing that could happen to them is they launch this hardware product, they sell it in, but then they have all of their GPUs reserved for kind of their ChatGPT business. So then how do they service this set of customers that they're trying to sell into? But with hardware, you have to sell like a meaningful enough volume that it becomes like known that people develop to it. And so they are too short GPUs right now in order to service all of the strategic opportunities they have in front of them. And so they're doing everything in their power to accelerate things. I think there is a ton of GPU, you know, unmet demand out there, both in the present and any future considerations of how powerful these models are going to be. And so you have to have these kinds of deals that sound obscene in order to get to even our base case kind of hardware demand forecast by 2030.
All right, Nick, then coming to you, because Brett's just sold us on the future and the amazing capability. And yet you can't just fast forward 5 years and say, we've done all of the investing and we've gotten there, right? You need to handhold the investor and keep showing them flashes of brilliance so that they keep giving you trillions of dollars. How is OpenAI going about this right now? There are some launches this last week. And what are your thoughts on ROI on the way to AGI?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, you know, where you're potentially servicing some of the, you know, revenue and dollars that you're going to need to acquire all of these GPUs and set up these data centers. And the first piece of news we got was on agentic commerce. And so OpenAI, in partnership with Shopify and Etsy, is now going to allow direct integration of instant checkout across Shopify's merchants and Etsy merchants. And they've open sourced a protocol in partnership with Stripe called ACP, Agentic Commerce Protocol. It actually ends up working with, and you can kind of combine the two, the other API that we've talked about on the call, MCP, which is pioneered by Anthropic. And so you're starting to get the guardrails, or not the guardrails, but the necessary rails set up to imagine a future where you know, these companies are not just generating revenue on a subscription basis, but potentially a take rate basis on goods sold through the ChatGPT interface or another interface that they decide to spin up. And I think that's where a lot of the work we did early on led us to, which is, look, on the consumer side, I think there is a ceiling for what you'd be willing to pay in a more direct way. And so you need to start imagining other ways to generate revenue off of these businesses and, you know, this significant expense incurred. And commerce, I think, just given the amount of efficiencies it lends, or LLMs lend to commerce and purchasing, having some sort of take rate embedded into selling goods makes a ton of sense. You know, we've talked about it in the past. Imagine you're looking out at different marketplaces. Right now, you have to compare and contrast, open up many different apps. Agentic commerce points towards, you know, you give it a parameter for, I need X, Y, and Z product, and it goes out and purchases on your behalf. And in our forecasting, we looked at, you know, what is the total bucket of spend that could be? And you're talking about, you know, order or trillions of dollars. I think where we're at right now is around $9 trillion is addressable by agentic commerce. So that would be, call it 25% of total online spend. And if you'd say, okay, 9 trillion, and you take a 2.5% take rate, which I think is probably on the lower side, if you can get to, you know, just higher capability with these models, which I think that's where we're headed, you're talking about a couple hundred billion dollars in revenue. I think it's around $220 billion. So that's on the direct side. And then the other news that we got this week, and we can stop here or we can go, but
wait, let me stop you there for a second. Yeah. 2.5%. That's 2.5%. Plus there's like a credit card processing fee. That's another 2% or something, right? That like stacks on top of that. Right.
Yeah. That's just what OpenAI would say. Okay. This is our, you know, take rate on this transaction.
Yeah. One of the most fascinating business models, the one that surprised me almost the most over my career, was when Groupon like hit market and was this brief, like, everybody's using Groupon to buy things, and retailers were willing to give up like 50% of the sale to get somebody in the door. You know, like that kind of marketing function. Well, no, it didn't. Like clearly it was like flash in the pan, but just the idea that businesses would be like, if we can get a customer, it's worth it to us to basically, you know, forget 2.5% on credit card processing. We'll give away basically our entire gross profit line on this first sale to a customer. So I just think that marketing function, you know, if done well, could be like a big, a much bigger take rate for kind of that lead generation.
Well, yeah, Nick, question for you, because you're coming to this fresh. This was on Friday, the back and forth. Does this help or hurt Amazon, Walmart, Costco?
So it's funny you ask this because we've actually just put out two pieces. They're rather long, but it goes through kind of the evolution of marketplaces. Because I think that is it is a great question to ask, because if you imagine what's happening, you're building in this new abstraction layer, right? This is now the front end, the top of the funnel. It's not just the top. And I think this is what's really important to understand about what's happening. This is not just top of the funnel. This compresses the funnel and it extends all the way down to purchase, right? So you're taking what would have normally taken a few minutes or maybe half a day if you're talking about a very expensive item or however long you want to take to search and discover. And you're taking that and you're compressing it probably into a matter of minutes, because now you've embedded this level of trust into this agent to go out and find and personalize and tailor this response to you. And so what I think you have to boil the question down to when it comes to an Amazon or a Walmart, and we've embedded it basically into three pillars, what we think is important to what will end up being surfaced when you ask an agent, I want to buy this product. And now it's going to go out to all of these different marketplaces. Well, one, what does not change in this future? Consumers are still going to be price sensitive. There's nothing about AI that changes our desires as humans to pay as little as possible for something that we really want. So you have pricing and then you have inventory depth. So if you're an Amazon or Walmart and you've built out this massive infrastructure, you have the most inventory for this agent to then go out and scrawl across, right? Amazon has more products than, you know, it's only matched really by Walmart. So are these two now going to come up on both of pricing? Yes, because they've, you know, structurally built in advantages on pricing so that they can deliver and service this inventory at the lowest cost. Then they're going to have the biggest selection. And then the third, which we think is really important, is speed of delivery, right? Okay, I can get it for cheap and I can keep consistently getting it at the same place. Can this place bring it to me in a half hour, an hour, a day, 2 days, right? That's going to ultimately matter no matter what changes. And so I think the big marketplaces actually are structurally advantaged here. One, because, you know, as much as this is a software story, the physical infrastructure side of this is why you can compete on those three pillars. And Amazon and Walmart have spent the last two decades building that infrastructure in. And so it's really important to, I think, fall back on that basis and not just say, okay, now that there is this new abstraction layer, these companies are going to be strategically disadvantaged. Actually, they could be structurally advantaged because of those three pillars that I think consumers will ultimately care about.
But Amazon's fastest growing category is advertising, right?
Right.
That's gone from this world.
I don't know that it necessarily is, because you're going to have ChatGPT with its abstract.
Who are you layer, advertising to?
But you're also going to have Amazon with its own embedded.
Amazon's going to try to do it. In fact, they have an announcement. They're going to do agentic purchasing. I think to me, it's like, well, what is right now? You know, I am in world prior, I was like, I need to get something. I'm going to go to Amazon and get it. In world now, I'm kind of like, well, I need to get something, but I'm going to search because, like, one, it might be I'm sick of Amazon's like commoditized crap. So I'm going to get some of Etsy's commoditized crap. Two, there's like all kinds of direct to consumer brands that are on, you know, Shopify, but not on Amazon. And I want to, you know, be, I don't know, stylistically distinguished. So I want to see kind of their non-commoditized crap. And so then I'm like, maybe starting at Google, but clearly, actually now I'm starting at ChatGPT, but I can't complete the transaction there. So it's kind of annoying because I have to copy and paste back into my browser to find the thing it's advising me to buy. Right. And so then this closes the loop where or should help close the loop where I'll be able to buy it right in ChatGPT. It seems to me that surfaces the entire landscape of inventory, and it like moves kind of like the search function one layer up. And so, yes, Amazon will win sometimes in that battle because I'm going to be price sensitive, but also time to delivery sensitive, you know, and trading those two off against the quality of the product as well. But there's also all kinds of inventory. It doesn't, like, inventory depth doesn't matter as much. It's really inventory breadth, depth across the entire stack, because I'm efficiently searching everywhere. Like, there's a CVS down the street that has the thing I want, and it can go in a rolling robot. Well, it seems like like the purchasing agent will be able to say, hey, you can get it in a rolling robot for a buck more in 15 minutes, or you could wait till tomorrow morning with Amazon, and then I'll be able to more efficiently make that trade rather than now I have to be like, I really need it. So I have to go to DoorDash and be like, yes, I'll pay $15 for the diapers I need or whatever.
It's interesting. I want to distill, it's like, Nick, what you're saying is, okay, you totally compress the funnel, right? It's like, you just go straight to bottom of funnel. And Brett, what you're saying is more like, actually, it's going to create infinite funnels, right? It's like, if I am biased because I agree with Nick on this one, right? Where it's like, what's the actual value and how does OpenAI drive like most revenue for them is make it so easy that there's less decision making and you just do it. But Brett, what you're saying is it's like, as soon as you add all of these other options, you're kind of going back to like, okay, I just Googled it.
It's just marginally more competitive than it was before. As in before, it's like, I know if I want something to arrive, I go to Amazon. Like if I want it to arrive predictably, I go to Amazon. If I want it to arrive immediately, I go to DoorDash. Those are like two separate options. And then there's a whole category of like, and if I kind of...
My point is
when you just add OpenAI, it's just going to continue to give you those same options, right? Because no one can service...
But it also gives you the long tail of options. As in, there's a reason that OpenAI signed the deal with Shopify here. Shopify is growing faster than Amazon, right? So there's, you know, on a GMV basis. So they're in really twice as fast, I think. So like there's already this long tail of people who are trying to go outside of Amazon's kind of like, you know, logistics, you know, Goliath. And I think this just makes that set of long tail more discoverable, more kind of comparable. What am I really trading off for here? And so it's not that it doesn't, it's not that it's going to like rip volume away from Amazon. It just makes it at the margin more competitive for them. Even like Amazon versus Walmart, now they're in competition with each other, whereas before it was like somebody is jumping into this funnel or jumping into this funnel. Now there's a search function where it's like, okay, like I could go either or.
I agree with that. But it's like, I think this actually, the chart that comes to mind when we're talking about this is the food at home chart, which is like over the last 20 years, wholesale/warehouse stores have just slowly marched on taking volume from grocery stores. And it's like, I think that's true. And it's like, there's only really three, I'm going to say this, maybe I'm wrong, comment if I am, but it's like, you got Walmart, you've got Amazon, you've got Costco. And it's like, they're just going to keep taking share slowly, I think, from...
I guess, Brett, maybe, and to tie in with what Sam's saying, it might get marginally more competitive, but marginally more competitive in a smaller grouping of competitors. As in, I actually think what happens is you see more consolidation because of what we already spoke about. Because you just, as a mom and pop, even as like a really long tail retailer, I just don't know how you can compete when these companies, one, if they're not winning, right, they have more margin to compete on being able to just show up in results, right? Like if you're talking about Amazon's ad business moving away, okay, then it's going to move to OpenAI and they're going to then be the ones bidding on behalf of, or they'll service, you know, a funnel of their retailers then bidding for OpenAI, and they'll take a cut of that ad spend that goes to OpenAI because they build up this functional channel so that you're still, you know, like there's a lot that goes into e-commerce that's, you know, more than just purchasing. And I think that's really why I'm not too concerned about, you know, oh yes, you build this new abstraction layer, but you really want to compete in commerce. You have to build in, you know, logistics. You have to build in a platform like Shopify has, right? Like there's a whole operating system that goes into servicing, and you don't want to just be selling on one channel. And if you look at the announcement from OpenAI, from Shopify, and from Etsy, none of them are saying this is, you know, the future and this is going to take up 100% share, right? They're all saying this is another tool for the consumer, or another tool for our merchants to reach the consumer, because we can see that chat is now becoming an avenue for selling, right? But no one, I think, is saying this is going to be 100%. I think it'll tend towards that over time.
Does it help Amazon's competitive position or hurt Amazon's competitive position that more people are going to start somewhere else other than Amazon.com to decide what to purchase?
I think
it helps. It's like, cause it's like they're bottom of funnel. They're the bottom of the funnel. It's like ultimately what, no matter where I search, I wind up at Amazon. And so it's like, if you have more people who are starting elsewhere, and then it's like,
this is such a bank shot. This is such
Brett, I'll take an even more cop-out answer.
This is good for Amazon.
I'll take an even more cop-out answer. It doesn't hurt them as much as you think, right? Like, it could go either way, but I don't think the worst case scenario is as bad as anyone.
I agree with that.
Yeah, no, I
think it's like a heavily complex ecosystem. I'm not saying this kills Amazon. I'm saying at the margin, this is competitive. This is makes the space more competitive. I think what you're saying to distill it is basically yes, but what it does is it actually increases the power law of steepness curve.
Yes.
Right. And Amazon is up here at the top. And so when you increase the steepness, like you create this huge long tail that's even longer. And kind of like these people that are like marginally in the middle just get like crushed out. And kind of like the returns to the logistic network, the returns to stuff that's not front of store actually increase. And that overwhelms the kind of marginal loss of like advertising.
Okay. It's what we talked about last week where like the inequality gap gets, it blows out, but you still, the rising tide lifts all boats, right? You have a bunch of merchants that are going to do extremely well. But the difference between those merchants and Amazon and Walmart, that gap is going to massively blow out.
But then Amazon's like aerial delivery thing is behind and kind of breaking, you know, they're not, I think they had two run into each other.
So pick Walmart.
Well, Walmart's interesting because then it's like, hey, they've never been able to motivate their distribution into kind of like the same e-commerce dominance that Amazon has, but they have, you know, a more distributed effective distribution center footprint. Unfortunately, it's packaged in these stores that are like inefficient for shipping out from. Maybe with autonomous delivery and then the combination of this, they can be more competitive. But
okay, I think we've reached a agreement on how we're at least framing and thinking about it. I want us to continue on because we've got the second announcement of how to make money on the way to AGI, which is, you know, putting your face on images and videos and doing funny things. Nick, what are your thoughts on Sora 2 with respect to VO3 and the whole strategy of launching another app as opposed to embedding it in the core ChatGPT?
Yeah, well, I wish I had access to Sora 2 so I could give a more, you know, hey, I've used it. This is how I feel about it. But, you know, just from seeing the videos, I think what we're seeing is, you know, maybe a potentially a new genre, a new medium of content being born with Cameo. And just to backtrack, Sora 2 is a new, you know, text to video model that has seen massive improvement. I think they point to, you know, on the physics side, they've really been able to train these video models to truly understand kind of the embedded physics that you see in a video. So it feels more lifelike. And from what we've seen, the videos, at least I've seen online, it does feel like as close to crossing the uncanny valley as you could possibly get with video outside of the watermarking and maybe, you know, some gestures and bugs, you know, some off cases. It really, you know, you see videos and you're like, wow, this is going to change a lot of what we were used to on the internet. And then, so you have that one component, right? Massive improvements on the performance side of a text to video model. But now you have to ask yourself as an OpenAI and all of these other companies, Meta's doing the same thing. If you don't have an Instagram, how do you distribute these videos? So OpenAI said, okay, we're going to create an entirely new application. Is going to function and feel very much like an Instagram Reels or a TikTok, right? You just have a feed, you scroll, you create right there in the application. And now this is now home to AI generated videos. OpenAI also has embedded, you know, the story within the story is a function called Cameo. So being able to take, I think it's a few videos of yourself, a couple pictures, and then I think you have to do some dialogue with the model itself so it understands your voice. And you can then take your personal likeness and upload it into these videos. So you can, you know, I want to see myself being the hero in a James Bond movie. It creates that. Or, you know, you can then also take your friends if they give you permission to be able to use, you know, them in your videos. You can combine all of that. So that certainly, like, that feature alone feels like a new medium of content where, like, you're bringing yourself into these, you know, highly produced, like, content that, like, really was only available for people like Mr. Beast that were, you know, creating and using all of these advanced tools. Well, the cost to create, and we've talked about this a ton, has come down significantly, right? And, like, you're going to see a whole host of video creators now using this. But I think the big question is this a standalone application? Is this a standalone medium and genre? Or is this something that then, you know, gets filtered into the platforms that currently exist? Like, are we going to see more of this on X and Instagram and TikTok? Or are we going to say, no, X, Instagram, and TikTok is reserved for human-made videos. And now we need Meta AI and we need Sora to then go and get our fix of what people typically deem AI slop, which is not as sloppy as you'd think. But I think that's the big question, is like, does this have to live in a separate ecosystem?
But don't you think, I mean, to me, it seems like a change in kind of like the modal format always, not always, but I think maybe always, like, correlates with a change in the distribution leader. Like, think about TikTok, you know, TikTok success caused kind of Instagram to go to the Reels and YouTube to go to Shorts, but not, it was after TikTok had, like, put together the slick video creation tools and the algorithmic feed enough to gain huge traction on the separate app. And you could say, well, why didn't, given kind of like Meta's at the time, Facebook's, I think, distribution dominance, how did they even let TikTok get an edge? You know, and I think there's something about, like, hey, this is a media that is produced differently. So having the creator tool right in line with it and integrated with the distribution is important. And it's something that it is its own format. Here, kind of like the idea that really this is designed to be just shared with more your circle of friends is a little, and so you have, you know, four invites to send out to your friends. And so you can insert each other into the videos, and that's like probably intentional strategic constraint they're placing on it because they don't have the GPUs to service it, like, going super wide, then allows for, or maybe necessitates having, like, there's a different kind of, like, set of, you know, concentric circles you're going to build and social graph specific for this medium, which then makes it both strategically use or make sense that OpenAI would do it as a separate app, and also make sense that somebody else might have trouble kind of on a broader broadcast platform app from launching this service.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I need to play around with it to get a better sense of how it feels. The question for me is that type of creation enough to stand alone, right? Like, I think about us, right? Imagine this is our group of, you know, I sent it out to you and we all got access and we're making videos with each other. How many of those fake videos do I want to watch in a row before I'm like, okay, now I want to balance it with, you know, something real. And then I want to see what my friends are actually doing in real life. Like, the content itself to me feels more, and again, I haven't played around with it, so don't jump down my throat, but the content itself to me feels more meme-y, more gimmicky than this is something that's going to revolutionize. And we're going to spend if you think about human made versus AI made, we're now going to spend, you know, 60% of our time just watching fake videos of our friends embedding themselves into very unrealistic situations. That's where I'm like, I don't know. Like, that's a huge question. And
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I just think it's funny because what you're comparing to, like, oh, I need a break from watching AI slop to watching, it's like, what's the human made? It's like Instagram Reels isn't, it's not like, you know, it's human slop. And you're like, okay, I don't know.
No, I agree. And I think maybe what ends up happening is, all content's going to have some level of AI, right? Like, think about every photo has some filter, right? It, you know, you're not really seeing anyone's real life on any of these social media platforms. So it's going to find some balance in between, like, you know, full video, like the videos we're seeing now where it's Sam Altman stealing GPUs and you're like, okay, yes, this looks real, but it's clearly fake. And so I think you're going to, you know, end up finding out what I think, the content is over time.
I think it might be better to think about this as a communications mechanism rather than a broadcast platform, as in things will go viral out of it. But the design is it's for in jokes between you and some friends. And it's kind of like I did some back of the envelope. I think these videos probably cost on the order of $4 an hour to generate. Okay. So then, I think that's what I got to. The net, or you know, it worked to 40 cents. $4 an hour, right? But you can only monetize like social or entertainment platforms at like 40 cents an hour, right? So you need each of these videos to be watched by, you know, 20 people in order for the economics to kind of make sense. And so it's just to be sent out to like little circles of friends. And yes, nobody's going to be interested in seeing me, Joe Average, in a cameo video doing something kooky, right? Except for people who already know me. And so then it's like more as in maybe this is more of a WhatsApp competitor than it is an Instagram competitor.
Probably
it's
more
like
of an
X video. What?
I think it's actually, if you think about, and I totally agree with you, Brett, I think it's probably more of an X competitor because if you think about it as a transmission of information, right? What's the fastest way to transmit information right now? It's to write a tweet or a post, right?
Right, right.
Because it's easier, it's cheaper, you can get it out there. So, but imagine I say to myself, I want to be a news broadcaster, but I don't want to, you know, buy this streaming application and doctor myself up every day. I'm just going to upload my face and I'm going to give this model the news that I want to broadcast and I'll have my own set and it will always have that same set. And now I'm just a news broadcaster. Like I could very well see that being a very big niche genre within this larger global generated AI. So I agree. Like, look, video is the most immersive type of content and everything will eventually gear towards the most immersive type of content, except for the only thing in its way is the cost to create it, both from a monetary perspective and then your time as an individual. And so time basically just went to zero, right? Like the cost to now create from a user perspective, my time involved is as much as it would be to tweet something out because I'm writing the same thing in and it just generates the video for me. But the cost, as you point out, is still pretty significant, right? That's why there's limitations. But once that cost gets down to near zero, I think text-based platforms, and Sam knows this, I think text-based platforms are dead. They have been for a long time. I think text, general reading, it's horrible. And I think everything will gear towards video over the long haul. So I agree with you, Brett. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's much more profound, like, social, political impacts beyond, you know, which app does this compete for? But those are for another day. All right, Brett, we're in here about 40 minutes in. Do you want to talk the benchmarks, or should we save that for next week and just go?
I think we can safely save that. Let's go to the ledger. Let's. I'm gonna lay out a market for you all. We might do this at the end of every episode. We'll see. And we're each gonna go. We're gonna buy or sell the market. This is a Polymarket market, not our recommendations to buy, sell, or hold anything, nor that, you know, these are futures contracts. They don't even fall under that stuff. But is OpenAI going to launch a browser by October 31st, by the end of this month? Right now, there's a 52% chance. I'm going with Sam.
Wow. What a interesting market to bring up. And so short term.
52% is way higher than I would have thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so you're 25 days. Well, no, yeah. That to me feels like somebody somewhere knows something.
Well, exactly. It was trading at 28% as of September 30th. So it's jumped. Historically, back in August, it was trading at 60%.
Interesting. You know, I'm just going to say no.
Sam's a seller. Nick?
I'm also going to go with no.
All right, I'm a buyer. I think OpenAI is, they're launching a zillion things every month.
Brett's been buying this up. Brett's been buying this up. This is his.
Basically, that I think they have, you know, they seem to announce a new thing every week. I think it fits with kind of the Sora 2 strategy and everything. I think they want to launch their own browser. And the advantage of having such powerful coding tools that all of your staff is maniacally using is you can launch lots of things. So I'm going to buy.
Okay. And is this invite only or it's open to everyone?
Yeah. What does the fine print say?
Oh gosh. Well,
that's where
you want me to actually read the contract. Yeah. Yes, that's true. The market resolved to yes if OpenAI publicly releases a standalone web browser that is intended for general web browsing and is available for use by the public in at least one country or region by October 31st. Ooh.
All right. Excited.
Changing his tune.
We're excited to see how this resolves. High level.
It could be via open rolling free waitlist signups. So that's what I'm pinning my hopes on, I think.
Okay. I could see by the end of the year.
Yeah.
End of the year would make me more comfortable.
End of the year is a 76% chance, but
25 days. I don't know.
But to summarize some longer term things we spoke about. Okay. We all semi agree. It feels as though we're early and short GPUs as a planet. Right. That was the first thing.
Yes.
Second topic, it seems as though we agree long tail winners as agentic e-com begins, but also steepening of the power curve and the big get bigger.
Well, and there's hundreds of billions of revenue opportunity for these purchasing agents. Those have to come from someone. That has to come out of somebody's pocket. You can't source it all from the middle of the curve, I don't think. Anyway.
All right. And then Sora 2, that was more up for debate. But don't get fooled. Your friends aren't doing cool things. Awesome. All right. We'll see everyone next week.
See ya.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other. And therefore, ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.